Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I'm the host of the show, and I'm in studio tonight with the lovely, vivacious Bobby Jean Bell.
I'm back.
Giggles to her friends. Yeah, I know what you're going to do. And we're down here in this wonderful winter weather.
Oh, my gosh. 100 and, I don't know, Jim, what were we today in Santa Clarita? 110 today in Santa Clarita. And thunderstorm. We had lightning, thunder, and rain, which is so unusual for this time of year.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was big, syrupy drops of rain and a rainbow.
Big, syrupy drops.
Yeah, they were like
big. Are you sure you're not a writer?
No, just a reader. Reading all kinds of fabulous books that help you really sharpen up your vocabulary.
I'm telling you. Well, let's get through our intros, and we'll bring on our guest. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. We're in business to help new writers and guys who just haven't quite figured out how to format, proofread, and gals, proofread and edit and just do everything it takes to get their book on the shelf and make them proud of their work. And we won't lie to you. If you got a bad manuscript, we'll tell you.
That's what editors do.
And that's what editors are for.
Exactly.
Number you can reach us at is 805-795-3165. And that goes right to Black Dog Publishing. And we'll be more than happy to give you a shout. In fact, I'm meeting with a new customer tomorrow. So that ought to be exciting. It's a paranormal book.
Ooh, we like those.
And he is a professor of history at some college in Glendora. Is it Citrus?
Oh,
Citrus College in Glendora.
Fantastic.
And he read Jonah Blue.
Oh, excellent, which I just finished the other night.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yes. I love it when people finish my books.
And it was great.
It's better than throwing them away. Okay, and we're brought to you also by Out West. And it used to be Out West Boutique and Cultural Center, but now it's just Out West. And they are your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Moots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. And if you want to call them, their toll-free number is 877-340-9378. Their website is www.scv, as in Santa Clarita Valley, outwest.com. And their direct line for tickets for their concert series, which is the fourth Friday of every month, is 661-347-9700. And if you tell them you heard this on The Writer's Block, you get like a $5 discount.
Yeah, absolutely. Or more.
Or more. What the heck?
And since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload, that's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shopping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 1-844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it on The Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible, is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today.
Yoo-hoo! Hey, how was your concert last week with John Zipper?
Oh, my gosh. John and his, as he calls it, the current band, were fantastic. We had a five-piece band, and they just played and sang with pure joy, just emanating from their voices and their fingers on the strings and on the stand-up bass, and they were wonderful. It was a great night. And SCVTV, of course, was there filming it, and we hope that that'll be out in probably 4 weeks or so to view online at scvtv.com.
Cool. And, of course, we gave you a plug right here in the Writer's Block.
Thank you. Yes, you did. And September, we're actually dark, and we finish out our year with past guest from the show, Almeda Bradshaw, right, coming in from Montana. And she's bringing her stand-up bass partner coming in as well. And that'll be a great night of Western music. She's also a poet, and she's a wonderful performer. And we'll close out the year with Almeda.
She was sitting right here.
October
27th. I was enamored. She's such a great musician.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and a wonderful woman.
Yeah, we're very excited to have her closing out our year.
And if you want to call and talk to tonight's guest, the number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Again, that is 818-602-4929. And I swear I will try to get you both on the air at the same time without hanging up on either one of you. So if you want to give it a shot, give them a shot.
It'll be good practice for next Thursday.
Oh, my gosh. No, we're going to get into that at the end of the
show. I know.
Okay. Tonight's guest has been called the master of the existential thriller from the BBC, or as we call it around home, the Baba Cha. One of America's best thriller writers, Culture Biz, and one of 21st century's most exciting authors, Washington Times, Mike Bond is a best-selling novelist, ecologist, war and human rights correspondent, and award-winning poet. I swear to God, Mike wrote this.
Well,
he had to have, because it's a form that I gave him.
Well, exactly.
Okay.
This gentleman's, though, background is astounding.
We're going to ask him about a lot of this stuff, because, well, I the last paragraph in his bio is the one that kills me. Bond has climbed many mountains across the world and hiked more than 50,000 miles, twice the circumference of the Earth, in North and South America, Europe, New Zealand, the Himalayas, Mongolia, Russia, and Africa. Africa. So, let's get into bringing Mike on board. Mike Bond, would you come and join us, please? Okay, Mike, she's all yours.
Yeah, well, I tell you, that's a lot of noise. I presume that was adulation and clapping and everything. But in any case, thank you very much, Jim, for that lovely intro. The only thing you missed is I've also climbed mountains in Antarctica.
Oh, my gosh. We
have to add that to the list.
Well, yeah, you have to put it on your bio, Mike. I can't read it if it's not there.
Yeah, and you have to update that Wikipedia page. Those five pages of Wikipedia, Mike.
5 pages of Wikipedia. Did you write that, too?
Well, all it counts is, all it counts really is, do you live a good life, and are you happy, and do you contribute to the lives of others? And
okay,
so that's really all anybody's bio needs to say.
There you go.
Anyway, I'm honored to be on the show, which contributes to the lives, or the show contributes to the lives of many people in a positive way. So I feel just by being here, I'm doing good in the universe. So thank you. And again, I'm honored to be invited and very much appreciated.
Well, we're honored to have you on the show.
And I want to read every book now, Mike. I read Snow, and Jim read Assassins, and I read some of Assassins, but I know I have to read Killing Maine, and I know I have to read like everything you've written, because you're absolutely entertaining, thought provoking, engaging, and a page turning author.
Wow. That's
very kind. What I try to do is to give myself to my readers. That's my goal, is to create something that's so completely real that it stays with you forever. But anyway, thank you for that. I do appreciate it, and I'm glad you like Snow. That's the one that's coming out in October.
Right.
And you're one of the few folks that's had a chance to read it already.
Well, and we won't want to give anything away about it, but it's a romp, and it's riveting, and it's got unexpected twists and turns and an interesting cast of characters, for
sure. I haven't read it yet, but I know your publicist, I believe, sent us a couple copies of
it. And some strong women. Thank you for writing strong women, by the way.
Oh, I love strong women. I think women. I mean, women are the force in the universe. I mean, we men are around kind of as, what do they call it in movies? Not additional characters. There's another word for the small character, you know, that comes and goes.
Nimrod.
I mean, all a guy has to do is spend a little time and the rest of the whole universe is up to women. That's it, you know. The race, the creating the child, growing the child, nourishing the child, birthing the child, and then keeping that child in the forefront of her concern for the next 50 years until she dies. That's all that women do. I mean, it's nothing. Anybody can do that. No. Right.
So if you
anyway,
say
I'm
so.
Glad you like strong women characters, because I do too. I think that literature needs to know the truth, and the truth is that women are strong and smart and can run nearly all of everything. And as a man, I'm extremely grateful for the existence of women, mm-hmm. needless to say.
Okay.
So, there you go.
I'm with you. I mean, how do you top that, Mike? Come
I
on,
know.
Really? I got a woman sitting across from me just glowing. and her husband's sitting over here grinning at me going, yeah, that's her.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's, I think that I tend not to be fussed up about too many politically correct things, but there's so many things that are inherent in our vocabulary and our way of looking at things that we need to change. Like, there's words I never use, like mankind. I never use that word. You know, I think it's. I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and I think that the greatest reason why Muslim countries do not evolve and are kind of stuck in the 12th century is because the role of women is so minimized.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
in order for society to evolve and to really grow and grant freedom, a society shouldn't grant personal freedom. Every individual should take her or his personal freedom. But it's very hard in some cultures. And those cultures where it's very hard, you can see they do not evolve.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as a world traveler, as you are, with tremendous experience living also in these areas, I think that's what you bring that sensibility to what you write. For those of us that are chair-bound and don't get out to see the world, you really bring us, whether we're in the snowy landscape of the book Snow or the landscapes without throughout Assassins. You mean you put us right there because you know it inherently. You've been
right,
there.
You've lived it.
I'm assuming.
I think that's really true. What I was thinking about earlier today when I was thinking about what did I want to mention while we had the opportunity to talk tonight, and again, I'm very grateful for this opportunity, is I wanted to say that everything I write about is true. That, to me, it has to be true or the story is false. And if the story is false, why listen? So when I write about a street in some barrio in Guatemala, or I write about a mountaintop in some lost corner of Africa, or I write about a battle with Soviet forces in 1982 in Afghanistan, I'm describing for you what actually happened in the place that really was there.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes, I feel that's, it's essential. It drives me crazy if something isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read a book, if I smell out something that the reader, that the writer, she or he just put together out of, you know, imagination, it smells bad, and I turn it aside. But mm-hmm. anyway, I'm honored that you feel a sense of place in my books, because what I want more than anything else is for my reader to become so emotionally involved in the situation that it becomes a personal memory mm-hmm. rather than just something that she or he has read.
Mm-hmm. Jim, you read Assassins. Can you kind of relate what he's sharing to your reading experience?
Yeah, I did. Assassins was a book that was extremely well put together. The story from the very first, and he mentions Afghanistan and the Russians. That's where the book starts. And then it goes all the way through past 9/11 and into present day. And it's the same character. I don't know how much or how little you want to talk about this, Mike. So I'm kind of being very careful about what I'm saying here.
No, by all means. I mean, my feeling, Jim, is that I wrote this book for everyone out there listening. I write for my readers. I love my readers, and I get enormous feedback from my readers. Right. And I do, to some degree, I do alter my writing based on feedback I get from my readers. So that's very important to me. But as far as Assassins is concerned, as you said, what it is, it's kind of a 30-year chronology of the covert wars between Islam and the West, and some of which I've been in, some of which my friends have been in. So it's all written from the point of view of experience and raw experience. And there are things in there in that book that blow people's minds, like how we got into Iraq in 1958 when we hired Saddam Hussein to kill the prime minister. He was a little punk in Baghdad, and he shot himself in the foot instead. My book is full of those kinds of details, all of which are absolutely and incontrovertibly true.
Yeah, I loved the conversations that took place in the CIA and the Spook Palace, and your protagonist, Jack. He goes from a warrior with a mission to a warrior that's wondering why the hell he's even doing this anymore.
Exactly.
And he goes 568 pages looking for one dude, and when he finally catches him, it's an anticlimax. And I loved that because you had me right there, and then boom.
Well, and isn't that so often in life, the search, the search or the hunt is that's the thing. And then when you've achieved it, even if it's a pot like a dream, I mean, when you've achieved it, suddenly it's like, well,
it was like the conversation was, I've caught you once. You're going to go and you're going to do this. And if you don't, I can catch you again.
I really
like that character, though.
Yeah, that's when he's being nice, because in the old days, you know, a lot of people just got shot. They were bad guys. But what I tried to do, and so much of you talked to him about anticlimax, that when you finally do get to that point, you're so exhausted, you're so miserable, you don't even believe in the chase anymore.
Right.
All you want to do is go home and die.
Right.
And so it's not like in the movies when you finally get somebody you've tracked for years. It's exhausting, fatiguing. You want to lie down and cry, and then you want to go home and sleep for a week. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was amazed at some of the information given, I'm certainly that is true about how we let Osama bin Laden go several times, times. They knew exactly where he was, and they could have gotten him any time. But
we needed him alive after Afghanistan in December of 2001. We, at that point already, the G.W. Bush administration was fixed on one idea and one idea only.
Sure, Iraq.
They wanted to invade Iraq. And so we needed to keep Osama alive in order to be able to say, oh, he's gone to Baghdad. He's now building al-Qaeda in Baghdad, which, of course, was a total lie, propagated by Cheney and Bush and Colin Powell and Rumsfeld and all those other people who should actually, if we lived in a democratic world, would be inside prisons right now for starting a war that there was no justification for, i.e. 2003 Iraq. But that, the funny thing is, that's gotten me in hot water with a bunch of vets, many of whom I'm very close to, because they don't like to admit that certain wars were tragic mistakes. And I'm saying to them, I'm sorry if I'm off on a tangent here.
That's okay, go for it.
Gina and Jim. What I'm saying to them is, look, to ask a person, and usually a man in these situations, if it's special forces, etc., to ask a person to go and lose his or her life, some 22-year-old, 24-year-old person, maybe with one baby child they've never even seen yet, you know, and the wife is at home. I'm thinking, again, a man's situation, which is often the case with special forces. And do you really want that young man to go out and die for a false war? Mm. I mean, so I'm telling the veterans, and I'm telling the Special Forces guys, look, you have to make a decision. Is this a war that you're willing to go along with? And if you're not, you know, I say at one point in Assassin's Jim, and I'll shut up, I'm talking too much. I say at one point that if you participate in a war that you don't believe in, you're a coward. And if you don't participate in a war that you do believe in, you're also a coward. Mm-hmm. So you got to participate in the wars that are valid according to your own ideology and your own judgment system.
Right, right.
And you have to be very careful about the ones you're not in agreement with. So enough for my grandstanding. There you go. Back to you, sir.
Well, you obviously have very much lived the life to be able to have a lot of insider information. How do you do your how did you gather research for instance for Assassins or books of that nature that you've written?
I don't research a thing, not
okay.
one thing.
Okay,
it all comes from my knowledge and my memory.
Wow, that's extensive.
I don't look anything up. I you know the thing about our if you wish our covert. Our covert forces is the wrong word. Our covert people who are aware what really goes on. And, for instance, where we are with Russia is, we can maybe get into this later, is another example where the covert thing is going crazy and causing harm. But what you have to do is you really have to just be honest. If you're not honest, you're going to get in so much trouble. So I've tried to talk about our whole last 30 years and what of war between Islam and the West, and what could we have done to make things better, to have limited casualties, both our own, as well as the atrocious civilian casualties in places like Iraq and Syria. Syria used to be my favorite country on earth, and it is just an absolute tragedy what's happened to that country, and it all came from the unjustified invasion of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So how far back do you go to find the roots of war? I mean, war is something that I hate, and I write about in hopes of somehow changing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the purpose of Assassins was, is to tell the truth about what's really going on, has gone on, in the hopes of bringing some form of more stable situation in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Which is not likely to happen in our lifetime.
I don't think so. There's so many reasons. I mean, it's an extremely... This is our breadbasket of the Middle East, where, you know, Homo sapiens first expanded out of Africa 60,000, 70,000 years ago, was into the whole area around the Tigris and Euphrates, and of course, it was much more fertile back then, and so it's. But always a situation, and it's where we transferred over from being hunter gatherers to being agriculturalists, which brought with it, of course, ownership of land and ownership of women. Mm-hmm. Ownership of women became part of agriculture, and the enormous health damage that went along, of course, with the development of agriculture. Mm-hmm. Less, you know, lower posture, less. Strong bones, bad teeth, you name it, and lower brains, lower brain size. But that whole area, the Middle East, has always been the theater for war, and of course, the presence of oil just makes it a hotbed because everybody wants that oil and don't care a damn about what happens to the people who live there.
Well, that's true. We spoke a little bit the other night about your background and everything else, and it's fascinating. If you wouldn't mind, go through a little bit of your background as far as being consulting and in the energy fields.
Journalist,
just so our listeners can get a kind of a feeling about who you are as Mike Bond.
Okay, Jim, that's fine. I think that's good. Well, after I graduated from college, I did a lot of climbing in the Himalayas just because I was nuts about mountains and still am. And then I got into, as it worked, I decided I wanted to do stuff that was interesting and fun. And so I got into war journalism and Middle East wars. And from there, of course, my basic goal always was to understand war so that we could make it less prevalent, if you wish, that I could write something that would be so true that people would turn away from more. But I did that, and then I came back to the States after a number of years abroad and married a brilliant woman, an engineer and a computer scientist. And so at that point I fell in love with an old love of mine, which was the whole energy thing from a physics point of view. And how do you create energy? What is it? Where does it come from? What are the different ways to do it? And I got involved in everything from analysis of the impacts of transmission lines and power plants to I became a consultant to many energy companies all over the world on how to upgrade power plants so as to lower pollution, how to upgrade refineries as to lower pollution. And then I went on to I got asked to be the chairman of an international group of 28 nations that was trying to link the Soviet, what had been the Soviet Union's energy grids with Western and Central Europe. So I did a lot of that kind of stuff and very much involved in renewable energy and what works for renewable energy and what is a scam. And for instance, solar, residential solar works perfectly for renewable energy, and windmills are a total scam. And they produce nothing of value. But so I got into that, and I've been writing books since I was young, and too busy to publish them. And so over the last 20 years, I republished some books that are actually 30 years old, and they're still on and off the bestseller list. So these are books of my experiences, everything from fighting elephant poachers in Kenya to being involved in the war in the Middle East and a number of different wars. So what I try to do with the books, Jim and Bobby Jean, is just tell my stories as truthfully as I can, because they have these incidents, these experiences have substantially altered and affected me, and I want to reach out to my readers and give them those same experiences so they can benefit from them too.
Do you feel that your experiences...
That's a long-winded response. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do you feel that your experiences have altered you, or do you feel that your experiences have actually made you who you are?
Oh, that's a complicated question. They've substantially altered me, but probably always also made me who I am. I mean, on the altered side, I have a terrible case of PTSD. I've been in so many combat and nasty situations. And the worst, sometimes the worst is being bombarded when you have no way out. And so you just lie there in the wreckage and hope that as they're coming down, they don't hit you. And I've had, you know, and obviously losing friends, and people are there one instant, and the next instant, they're pieces of hamburger on the wall. And particularly if you love them, it leads to a lot of emotional impacts. Mm-hmm. So this lifestyle has certainly altered me substantially. I try to not be around on the 4th of July, for instance, because the sound of the firecrackers.
I can't take it. I hate it. It reminds me too much of it.
Well, you've got the Vietnam experience.
Yeah.
I mean, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, it's made me who I am today, because I really want to transmit to my readers what things are really like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I might not if I hadn't been through all this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about snow for just a moment, if we can. And this book is not out yet, and we do not want to do any spoiler, not even spoiler alerts, because this book, you just have to pick it up and... You just have to read it all the way to the end. But you create, you in this book there are three guys. I like them, each one of them, so much. Zach and Steve and their guide, who is half Cheyenne Mountain man, Kurt. And Zach and Steve, you start the book right out. You know, they're all kind of on a hunting guy kind of expedition. They kind of do this every year. We're in a really wonderful western snowy landscape, and they come across a downed plane. And then that's all I'm really going to say. I really liked Zach and Steve. What, tell us a little bit about those three guys without giving a whole lot away.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Bobby Jean, because I started that book in 1996 when I was young. I used to be a wrangler on hunting trips in Montana. I lived in Montana at the time. And what a wrangler is you have a guide, and the guide will say, it's usually almost always a he, though there's a couple of wonderful women guides in Montana. so you get what you call dudes, which is people from away, people mm-hmm. not from Montana, coming in like from L.A. or New York.
Greenhorns,
they want to go on a hunting trip, and some of them may be very good, but you know the territory, and you know the mountains of Montana or this particular place. So I've been up in the mountains of Montana in the snowstorms guiding people who couldn't shoot straight, and then I had to deal with all of the impacts of that. But I started writing the book then because I thought, what would happen if a couple of guys who had potential financial difficulties were to find themselves in a situation where it's possible they could resolve those financial difficulties illegally.
Mm-hmm.
and so the question comes down to right away, how do your judgments about what is right and wrong depend on your piece of the action? Mm-hmm. And so that's how it started, but it does take place in an area of Montana that I know extremely well. I've hunted there for years, and in fact, the snowstorm where I started this, book in my head, 1996, a buddy and I had a string of horses, he had a string of horses. We trucked them into the wilderness and rode for quite a while, a day and a half, to get way back and set up camp in the midst of grizzly territory. And we hunted for a week and didn't see a damn thing. And his wife, this absolutely beautiful woman, and a very smart woman, she comes in a week later because she'd been working on her job. She rides her horse up the 12 to 15 miles in, and she kills an elk within hours of getting into camp.
Don't you hate that?
Don't you hate that? Yeah.
And I said to my friend Gary, this is why we love women. You know, we just sit around the campfire and keep our hands warm, and the women do all the hunting.
Well, yeah, you say, hey, anyway, you hunt, I'll cook.
Oh, that's great. Well, yes, and Zach, you've created such wonderful guys that have been friends like forever. And Zach is a former NFL star, and he's a talking sports casting, you know, head during the football games, you know, very well known in the public eye. And then the other guy, his buddy friend Steve, is a Wall Street broker. So they come from, you know, two different backgrounds, but they know each other through the financial dealings. Steve has been Zach's Wall Street, his broker.
Yep.
And they have such a great relationship. I mean, these are two guys that really enjoy being with each other. And so as you take us through a 10-day period of time, we see them together, we see them apart. You take us to Wall Street, and you take us to Denver, and you take us to ritzy glitzy Vegas, and you know, you describe those places so very well that you feel, again, like the reader. That's really important to me as a reader. I felt it with Chuck Walsh's books. I feel it with Craig Johnson's books. I'm right there. You put me right there, and I'm able to, you know, be right at the gambling table or wherever they are. And they also have, they're not cartoon characters, but they in that they bounce back from things. I mean, you have them in very hazardous, challenging physical situations, either climate-wise or just life-threatening kinds, and they just bounce back, and they bounce back, and they bounce back. Well, you kind of go as a reader like, really? Okay, I'm okay. I believe. Okay, he's got that, you know, arm situation, but all right, I'm gonna believe Mike writing that character that he's surviving it. So,
well, again, this is Bobby G, and this is all from personal experience. I played a lot of football, and when I talk about Zach's many injuries and how painful it is to get up in the morning, that's my personal experience. And in terms of bouncing back, that's what we need to do in life. Life is going to shovel all kinds of nasty, miserable stuff at us, as well as great joy. And the more we love the great joy, the more we're going to be subjected to the misery. Mm. Because if you don't love, you don't sorrow. And if you do love, you're going to sorrow. And so I think that my characters are true to life, and even many of my characters in my books come out of combat or environmental battles. If you're not super tough, if you just don't stay on things, no matter how defeated and exhausted you are, you have to stay on, and you stay on, and you stay on. And it's like Mahatma Gandhi said, one day suddenly you win. You got to stay on it. You can't give up. You cannot give up. And many people don't ever give up and battle and battle and battle, and they still don't win. And those are the people I care about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I liked both of these men and Kurt as well. I saw them having to make some life-changing decisions that I didn't necessarily agree with, but I was willing to play along to see what was going to happen. And I really liked them, and I liked them more and more and more as the book, you know, evolved. Because
oh, that's lovely. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great read. It'd be a great movie.
Yeah, several books are being looked at by Hollywood now, but Hollywood is a crazy place right now. And it's not being necessarily driven by the quality of the stories that are being produced. Mm-hmm. Whereas by comparison, the European film industry, which is mostly Germany, France to some extent, the UK, and even the Netherlands, and the Italians, they together are making smaller, much less expensive movies that are actually in tune with what really goes on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But several of my books, what counts for a movie is the simplicity of mm-hmm. location and not too many characters and a strong driving plot that leads to an exciting conclusion. So I think a lot of my books meet those criteria. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that Aristotle in Poetics kind of summed up so many things, and one of the things he said was that that great books are written about great people or people who have potential to do great, and what can I say? Moderate books are written about moderate characters. I'm interested in the human battle for emotional and spiritual survival, and that's what my books are about.
Let's change gears here a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about your writing process.
Oh my God, I was afraid you were going to go there.
You know we have to go there, Mike.
Well, you know, we all do it different ways, you know. So we're and all the writers, especially would-be writers and brand new writers, they love to hear this because this is how they learn.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I'm a little suspicious of talking about this in a show that's called The Writer's Block.
Well, we're going to ask you about that too, but we're down to about 10 minutes, so we're going to have to kind of move it along. But talk to us a little bit about your process.
Okay.
You know, do you get up and write?
Difficult. I said to my wife today, and she's tired of me complaining about how bad it is to be a writer. But it's like swimming through some thick, muddy swamp. And sometimes I compare it to climbing a cliff that with no handholds. And I write I'm driven to write. I'm driven to tell these stories, but it's so hard. It's so hard to say the truth. And you go over each word, and you just want to say the truth. So I generally get up in the morning, and I read French newspapers and some other stuff, and then I get into it, but it's a constant battle. It's a constant battle with mediocrity.
Oh,
wow.
So do you try to write? Do you try to write every day, Mike?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't try to. I can't stop it.
You can't.
It's like a drug. Yeah, I can't stop it. Mm-hmm. And occasionally, I make a firm commitment that I'm not going to write on weekends because I need some time. I got a huge family, you know, a huge Irish family. We all love each other. We spend a lot of time together, and I want to be able to give myself to my family and other stuff. But I get up in the morning. All I want to do is write. It's. I have to. And I'm at the age where I have 20, 30 more books I want to write, mm-hmm. and I better get going.
Yep.
So I don't know if I've answered it, but I don't follow any attempted style. I don't really share my writing with anybody until the book is done, before it goes to the editor, except maybe my wife. I've written probably 2 to 3 million words to get to the point where I finally am able to write with precision and economy. And so you were speaking about young writers or people coming in to writing, and I think one of the most important things is just write and write and write and write and slowly, like becoming a fine violinist.
Mm-hmm. That's what we tell them too.
Mm-hmm. You have a lot of dialogue in your books, but you also have a wealth of background information. You know, I learned a lot about the NFL, for instance, because one of the characters is with the NFL, but I learned about football from another whole angle, and you're fabulous with that. Do you, are you comfortable with dialogue? Is there a challenge for you as a writer with dialogue versus non-dialogue sections?
No, none whatsoever. Because another thing Aristotle said in Poetics, and I have it taped to my computer so I can read it to you. The writer should place the action before his or her eyes as much as possible, thus seeing everything most distinctly as though it had arisen in front of her or him. They will discover what is fitting and will least forget incongruities. What that means in essence is that the story is happening in front of your eyes. Mm-hmm. All you're trying to do is describe it. Mm-hmm. And my people speak for themselves. I mean, they write. They say their words paragraph after paragraph, and I may tear it down because, again, writing is like painting in that you take a very complex palette and you try to make it something that people can envision. And I think, and Hemingway is very good at this, of course, is taking a very complex situation and rendering the emotions through a brief description of the setting itself. Mm-hmm. So I don't my characters talk and I listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All and because we do call the show Writer's Block, we will ask that question at this point in the hour.
This
we
is
always
the one you
do.
Hated.
Do you encounter it, and if so, how do you resolve it?
Well, it's interesting. Somebody asked me a couple of years ago at a signing with my book, Saving Paradise, what caused you to start that book? And I thought about it, and I tried to remember, and I said, gin. And they said, what? And I said, gin, gin and tonics. And after several gin and tonics, I sat down one night, and there was a huge problem in Hawaii with an attempt to destroy this magnificent island with windmills. And it had been bothering me, and I sat down right then, and my story came right out. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that I do have writer's block, which I really don't, but I'm not afraid at all to have a shot of vodka, particularly Russian vodka.
Me either.
I love Russia. I just came back from Russia. I love Russia. I spent a lot of time there. And it's the most incredibly literary, happy, bubbly country, and, of course, financially, they're just booming, and it's just a fun place, and their love of literature is enormous. There's bookstores everywhere, and I just you know, I places like that, it's hard to have writer's block when all you're trying to do is describe something so magnificent as that.
Okay, so your answer to writer's block is gin.
I'm sorry, Jim.
I said your answer to writer's block is gin.
Or vodka.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue with that.
Do you work on? Do you find that you work on multiple projects at a time since you have so many ideas, or do you are you really just you know head down get the one done before you move on to the next one?
I end up working on several at the same time, but mostly on one. Okay. And I try to be productive because, as I said, Bobby G, I've got so many stories, that things that actually happen that are true that people would enjoy knowing about that I want to get out there. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very driven. So at the same time that I'm working, for instance, on a nonfiction book about personal freedom and another nonfiction book about wolves, I'm also working on three different novels at the same time. That almost 90% of what I do in a day is focused on the specific novel that I'm working on now, which in this case is another one of my Pono Hawkins thrillers, and this one is set in Paris. It's 70,000 words at this point.
I know that Mandevilla Press has been your publisher for all of your books. How did you find them, or how did they find you? That'll be my last question.
Yeah, well, I had been with a number of different traditional publishers, I finally went with Mandevilla because Bob DeFurio, who owns Mandevilla, is the former CEO and publisher of Random House and Penguin America, and he really knows the publishing world, and he's been an enormous help. And having a smaller independent press, you can change your prices, you can do a lot of things that the big traditional sleepy last 19th century houses don't do. So I'm very happy with a smaller publisher, and it certainly isn't hurting sales are just amazing.
Excellent. Well, we're gonna have to kind of wrap this up. Can you let our listeners know where they can get a hold of you, and you know, website and email, and do you have a Facebook page and all the
I have a Facebook page which my publisher set up but I don't know how they I don't know anything about it. My website is mikevaughnbooks.com, and mostly I sell through Amazon for a number of reasons, and just go to my Amazon page, okay. Mike Vaughn, and you get all the stuff in there, and anybody who has a comment, a concern, a question, I answer every single thing that comes to me, usually the same day. And if you can leave a comment or a contact thing on mikevaughnbooks.com. And I just want to say, too, everybody, go out and buy Jonah Blue. It's a great story.
Right. You read it, too.
I think it's important that we say that. You know, I do.
Well, thank you so much.
I certainly enjoyed it.
Another book where the action happens right in front of your eyes.
It does that.
Absolutely.
It does that.
This has been so much fun, Mike, and I know the next one that I have to read is Killing Maine.
Okay. Well, it's very important about Killing Maine because it's a story about this most beautiful state, Maine, which is the last holdout of wilderness in the eastern United States. Mm-hmm. And the state of Massachusetts and the state of Connecticut are now trying to cover the whole state of Maine, every single ridge and mountain, with wind turbines that do absolutely no good about climate change. Nothing at all. It's just a big scam. So that's what Killing Maine is all about.
Yep, I got having gone to college there, I absolutely have to read that book.
Well, Mike,
went to Bates College, which is a great school.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a wonderful place. It is a wonderful place.
Well, Mike, thanks for joining us tonight. It's been great having you on the show.
Well, I'm honored to be on the show. I thank you both very much. You guys make a difference in the writing world, and everyone out there who's working on a you just got to please keep going and then do another one after it.
Excellent.
And the least thing that happens is we get to learn about ourselves and the world.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes we sell books.
Sage advice. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks,
Have yourself
Mike.
A great evening, and I will be sending you a coffee mug.
Have a little vodka for us.
And it does hold vodka.
I certainly will.
Take care, my friend.
Thank you both very much.
You're very welcome.
It was an honor to be on the show, and I very much appreciate it. Take care.
It was an honor having you. Thanks, and have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Mike Bond.
You have to read Snow now.
Oh, you have to read all of his stuff. His books are just phenomenal. And what a great guy.
Yeah, of course.
We've got to read Toto Blue. Hurrah. What a great.
Thanks, I mean, Mike, for that.
Thank you, Mike. I mean, there's a commercial for you. Next week on the Writer's Block, we have a special two-hour show coming up. And it's right now it's shaping up to be just a hullabaloo. We've got...
A lot of chairs. We're going to need a lot of chairs and microphones in here.
Well, we have Richard Polinelli will be in studio with us. Actually, the bookie's going to be here. We have Kathleen Rogers will be on the phone with us. We have Caroline Giammanco is going to be calling in. Mm-hmm. And assorted other authors and people who have been... or have not yet been on the Writer's Block. The conversation will be about agents and publishing and all kinds of good stuff. So if you are a writer, this next week is the one you want to listen to.
And if you have a question that you'd really like to be asking, you can also leave that on our Writer's Block Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Just the Writer's Block, because that way we can be sure to get that question asked and have two or three different answers.
Right. Now that web address is the Writer's Block Radio Show.
The Writer's Block Radio Show. Right. Yeah, Writer's Block Radio Show, because there are a lot of Writer's Block things out there. Radio Show.
Radio Show.
And we would love that. And you can also, we'll be also able to call in.
Right. You can call in. And of course, the number here is 818-602-4929. If you got a pencil, write it down. If not, go to the Writer's Block Radio Show website, and that number is on there.
Yep.
Along with the podcast from tonight's show and last week.
And all of them. And last week, oh my gosh, if you missed the interview with Craig Johnson last week,
or
even if you listen to it, I would encourage you to listen to it again. I've listened to it three times now, and I'm learning something different every time. Craig Johnson, the creator of the Longmire series, just everything he shared was a pearl.
Yeah.
And you and Russ, with your questions, just opened the gates, and he just shared
it
so
like
authentically and with such joy. It was a phenomenal interview.
It was a great interview.
And there are gems and jewels littered throughout that for writers.
Right.
And even as a reader, it made a lot of things come to life for me, because I understand what he was talking about as a reader.
Well, he even mentioned the fact that he writes first person, which is not always easy.
Yes, he writes first person.
It is not always easy.
Walt, through the eyes of Walt Longmire. So, yeah.
It's not always easy. Okay, that's going to do it for us. Make sure that you tune in next week. Next week's going to be an interesting show, if nothing else. The bookie and I are going to be on Sheena Metal's show next week at 6 o'clock before we come in here and do our show. So we'll be actually on there for three whole hours next week. Woo-hoo! And that's it for us, Bobby Jean. Love having you back in the studio. Jim? Always a pleasure.
We'll see you next week.
And for the Writer's Block, and for just about everybody else that listens to the show, this is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to the Writer's Block, and we are out of here.